So I have to let you know that at the sermon circle on Wednesday mornings, 9:30, we always have a vibrant conversation. One of the little pieces this week was, how many of the seven deadly sins did David commit during the first reading? And then, of course, we had to figure out, can anybody still remember all the seven deadly sins? And then we should also think about how many commandments were broken. The only thing, even though it is a temptation to talk about the seven deadly sins, is the first reading teaches us that Uriah was dutiful and faithful, not David. So, I have two stories to tell you. The first one starts with Bishop Barry. One Wednesday morning, we were in after the Mass at 7:45 in the morning, we had breakfast. Again, another great place to be. And we were talking about the readings and how sometimes, by the luck of the draw or not, you get David doing everything possible to be a mess. And Bishop Barry said, you know, he said, some of these readings are just difficult. And he said that whole year C, there's a three-year cycle for Sundays, A, B, and C. He said that whole year C, I'm just going to retire from. I so get it. So, we're in year B, more to come. The other story I want to tell you is about a deadly sin and about a Franciscan. So when I was in theology, we lived in a house, there were 40 of us, and maybe 50 even, but we had to revise the house operating procedures. Some call them rules, but remember, we're Franciscans, so every rule has got a little smudge, you know? So we called them guidelines. Anyway, it took us a year to do this thing, and you have to, you know, the people on this committee were moral theologians and canon lawyers and scripture scholars and a few of us low people who didn't know a whole lot. We brought, I don't know, we were the color commentary or something, to this very fascinating conversation. But it took us, the reason why it took us the whole year is because they'd bird walk off into something and, you know, what does that have to do with soup on Fridays? But anyway, that's why we were there, because we asked those questions about soup. Anyway, at the end of the year, the guardian of the house, the head guy of the house, said, you all have done such a good job, I want to thank you, and what I want to do is take you out for dinner. Franciscans don't go to dinner. Not theologian Franciscans. You know, we had soup. Lots of soup. So we were like, oh, this sounds great. So we went to a restaurant, again, unknown. And it was kind of a nice restaurant, not like a Denny's or, you know, something, whatever that would be. And it was a nice restaurant. And the guardian said, you can have a drink before dinner, and you can have salad, and you can have soup. You can have a nice dinner and you can have a dessert. You can have, just do this whole thing. You know, just have a great time. So there were 10 of us. We had never, ever done this. Ever, ever. So we're having a good time. We're having a, you know, and the waiters and the waitresses were like, what do you do with 10 men in brown dresses? You know? Anyway, as we see, the seven deadly sins are not that bad to talk about, right? So, at the end of this meal, and we're all, you know, we have expandable belts. Fabulous. Anyway, at the end of the meal, we're sitting there, and the moral theologian gets up. Clink, 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 the glass. Well, the 10 of us automatically be quiet, because we know what means coming, probably danger. And pretty much everybody in the restaurant, who were wondering also what to do with 10 men in brown dresses, who were having a really good time. Clink, clink, clink. The moral theologian stands up and in this booming voice said, gluttony is at best only venial. What that meant was we could have eaten everything we ate and we weren't going to go to hell. Being gluttony, it's one of the greatest lines ever. Gluttony, at best, is only venial. Anyway, okay, that's it for the seven deadly sins. Just remember, gluttony is only a little sin, not a big one. What I really want to talk to you about today is the gospel and how this fits in. Last Sunday, we heard the story about Jesus, and he was tired. He's getting tired. And he goes up again to the mountain, and he's trying to find a place to be by himself, and the crowd follows him. And he, in his tiredness, looks at the crowd and sees them with compassion. That's where we start today, the compassion of Christ. You and I have this compassion. This is how God approaches us, with compassion. So we have to just sit in that for a little while. Soak that up, that God is a God of compassion and sees us in our hunger for food or justice or peace or love. God is compassionate. We have a similar story today where Jesus again is tired, and you know the words that he wants to say are, "Leave me alone." Anybody that's been a caregiver has uttered those words. They're not bad to do, but we just get tired. I got it, thanks though. So Jesus is just there. He's tired. And yet he looks out at this group of people, and again he sees them with compassion and says to Philip, "How are we going to feed all these people?" Now, let's not worry about 5,000 and 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. Let's just say that 5,000 people. Now, I don't know if any of you are estimates of crowd experts. You know, it would be difficult. I mean, we can look at this crowd and 130. It's a guess. But if we're at the jazz thing, Penny, wherever she is, could tell us, wherever she is, back there, I guess. You know, when you look at a crowd and you think, is that 10,000 or 5,000 or 20,000? There are political people that look at a small crowd and think it's millions. It's summer, folks. We just gotta... Anyway, so it's an impossible number. It's huge. See, that's the point. It's more people. It's like, this is impossible. It could be 250 people. But can any of you go home and feed 250 people on the spur of the moment? And if you can, why am I not invited? It's an impossible number. And what happens, though, is that in all of those people, however many there are, the story is told that Jesus said, "You know what? We're going to be thankful that we're here, and we're going to take what we have, whatever that is, and it will be enough, so that everyone here will be fed." Everyone here will be fed. So much so that at the end, there is an abundance of barley bread, which, by the way, was the cheap bread, not the fancy bread. So an overabundance of barley bread and extra fish. Well, maybe they didn't stay around too long. But the message is that the compassion of Jesus, seeing people in hunger, has a way of fulfilling that hunger, of making sure that everyone has what they need to be not just satisfied. There's a deeper sense of satisfied. I want to say fulfilled. And it is through compassion. Now, nice story, and what does it mean for us today? Well, my dad used to say, gee, I wish I'd lived during the time of Jesus. Many people say that. And my dad would also say, I wish I'd been there for the leftovers. And I get that too. But the truth is, that compassion of God, the willingness to see deep into who we are, to see what we hunger for, to see that we want fullness in our life, is present. We are fed today through the compassion of God, not only in the bread here, but in the bread that sits in your hearts. You see, the miracle of the 4,000 or the 5,000 or the 2,500 or pick a number is that Jesus taught by compassion so that everyone learned compassion. And it is through that compassion that they were able to dig deep and come up with something to help their neighbor who was hungry. If you and I want to be compassionate, Jesus is teaching us that we have that within us, and that it is possible for us to be bread for one another. We have a lot of ills in our culture and in our society. Compassion teaches us never to see the ill. It teaches us to see brothers and sisters. Compassion teaches us to know the story behind the problem, and the desire to find a solution is found in compassion, of reaching out to our brothers and sisters in eyes of love and wondering, how is it here that we can do what seems impossible? How is it here that we can know the height and the depth, the length, and the breadth of God's love? How is it possible? And all things imagined are possible with God. Let me say that again. All things are possible with love. We are the bread of the world. That's this miracle.